Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I'm Ryan Durge, and today I'm joined by award-winning realtor, travel host, content creator, and one of my best friends, Alex Drobin. Hi, Alex.
How's it going? This is actually so funny that we're doing this finally. Thank God. So for anybody that doesn't know, Ryan and I went to Humber for a post-grad in broadcast journalism together. And we've been creating content for a long time. So both of us have our own podcast. We decided let's just do one together and see how it goes. We actually saw each other last night. We went to a play together. It was a show. It was called The Slava Snow Show. I personally hated the show. I thought it might have been the worst thing I've ever seen. Ryan, what did you think of the show? First and foremost.
I just totally disagree. First of all, thank you for taking me. I loved the show, but I'm also like the musical theater kid. I love plays. And there's a lot of like subtext there that you had to read into because there weren't really any lines. And if there were lines, it was like gibberish or in another language that wasn't English. And so a lot of it was just like them acting it out with their movements or with the set pieces. And so I felt like, I don't know, I loved it. I thought it was colorful. It was fun. It was really one of those things that was like any age could go to that show, I think, and enjoy it, other than Alex Drobin, who didn't enjoy it.
I thought it was the worst. Like, it might have been the worst thing I've ever seen. Like, my mom gave me these tickets as a gift, and it's got really good reviews. Like, it's a good show for people that like that sort of thing. But the whole time I was sitting there being like, oh my God, like, I cannot believe I'm sitting here. Probably 15% of the show I did like, and 85% of it I was like, I cannot believe I'm here right now. First and foremost,
I was there. That's wild.
Okay, so I'm literally looking it up right now. It looks like it has pretty good reviews. Like, people think it's great.
There we go.
But I just don't understand who this is for. Like, I got these tickets as a gift, and I was like, you know, I haven't seen Ryan in a bit. Should bring my boy Ryan. And I was sitting there the majority of the time, literally being like, what on earth am I doing here? I couldn't believe it. I would say 15% of the time was good. Like, that last part was incredible. Other than that, I'm just like, this is not going anywhere. There's no storyline, Ryan. Anyways, whatever. So that's what we did last night.
It was magical.
We decided, you know what? Let's hop on a podcast together today and talk about life. So that's what we're doing.
Your feed is filled with real estate content because, you know, like I said before,
I know how much you hate that. I know how much you hate that. But okay.
Well, you're an award-winning real estate, so it makes sense. But I also know Alex Drobin outside of being a real estate agent, and you're such a cool guy. And so I want to see the content outside of that. Like, you're a huge foodie. You love traveling. Anyways, but one of the things that I saw recently come up in your feed, and I know you don't like to brag or anything like that, but I gotta mention it. You recently were awarded the RE/MAX Hall of Fame Award.
Yes. Yes, I was.
How does that feel?
I've been doing this for about like 7 years now, the whole real estate thing. It feels good, but honestly, man, like, it really does. I know this sounds cheesy and corny or whatever, but it just comes down to my clients. Like, something like that is an indicator that people put their trust in me with their biggest purchase, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I don't care about it as much as it makes me feel good that people put their trust into me.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's all about like my clients and people who refer me and like my family. And, you know, that's what that award represents to me. It doesn't represent anything like for myself personally. It just represents that people put their trust in me.
It's all about the community too that you're building, right? The community already exists, the people that you're helping, but you're also creating this community of people that put your trust in you, like you said, you know, with probably one of their biggest purchase, if not the biggest purchase of their life. And it actually, I have a question about that because I do feel like, as someone who rents, you know, in a city like Toronto, that all of my friends, you know, that post about their new condo or their new house, and, you know, they're holding up the key, they're holding up the sign. It's really exciting, of course. But when you actually, you know, talk to these people, a lot of them got to that place because of help from their parents or help from their grandparents, which is amazing. Like, you know, do what you have to do. I think it's, if you can own real estate, then do it. But for someone that maybe, you know, isn't expecting that to come through, that lump sum that will help you at least get a down payment and then you just pay off the rest like a rent payment, I'm just curious, like, what you would say to them, because I feel like that's a lot of people out there that just can't even afford to get to the point where they can put a down payment on a house, especially in such a competitive market.
The first thing I would say is that out of all of my clients that are like around our age, let's say mid 20s to say late 30s, even yeah. let's say early 40s, 99% of them get help from their families, like you just said. So most people that can afford property right now are still getting a ton of help from their family.
Yeah.
You know, so it sucks to say, but in a lot of situations, that's really one of the only ways that you can acquire property. Like, of course, you can save. If you have enough money, you can put you can put money together with a partner, whoever you're with, and you save enough money for a down payment. The main thing I tell people is that you have to start small in Toronto.
Okay.
We are in one of the most competitive real estate markets in the world, not in Canada, like in the wow. entire world.
Really?
100%. So it's really difficult to buy property here. So it's like, you know, it's not easy. So what I would say is a lot of people want to go for like that townhouse or that detached property, when in reality, you have to save up enough for a condo. Like okay. you have to start off small and then move up while you're getting equity. So, you know, I've talked about this plenty of times before, but I'll tell you once again, for anything you buy under $500,000, you only need 5% down if you qualify through a mortgage broker. So you only need 5% down. That's $25,000. So right now there are tons of condos that are sitting on the market for $500,000, $600,000, and they've been sitting for a month to 2 months, whatever, 3 months in some cases. The condo market has taken a dip.
Really? So even like a one bedroom?
Yeah. You can get a one bedroom. You can get a one bedroom in the West End for like $550,000, you know? Mm. So if you think about that price point and you think about the down payment, if you qualify, what you really need is $25,000 of the first $500,000 and then an additional 10% of the difference between the price. So say you're buying something for $600,000, you need 5% of the first $500,000, which is $25,000. And then another 10% of the difference. So 10% of $100,000, which is $10,000. So you're only putting down $35,000 for a place that's $600,000. And then you have your land transfer taxes and lawyer fees. So it's like, is it hard to save that amount of money? Yes. But can you do it if you have a partner or if you have some help? Yes. And then you buy something like that, you let it appreciate in value, so it'll grow, and then you end up buying something else. So like mm-hmm. that's how you purchase property in Toronto. But like you said, most people do have a lot of help from their friends, from their family.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. Like if you can, I'm just saying that for a lot of people that may not be the case, and it can be discouraging because you're like, that may be the only way. So it's good to hear that.
Are you trying to buy real estate right now, Ryan? And you haven't come to me yet? Are you looking to buy or sell? And you haven't even told me? No, but the other thing is, Ryan, the other thing, I'll just mention this. I've had a number of people over the last like year to 2 years come together with their friends to purchase an investment property. And you can come together with whatever, 3 or 4 friends, get together the down payment, and then rent the place out and acquire equity from it. And then also, like, Toronto is not the only place in this province where you can buy property.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to live in Toronto, unfortunately, that's just what it costs. But if you're okay with going a little bit out of the city, plenty of good deals in Durham, you know, Whitby, Oshawa, Ajax, lots of good deals out west as well. So Milton, even Mississauga. So yeah, you can definitely buy something if you plan for it and you save enough money and you get a bit of help. So yeah, it's not the easiest, but it can definitely be done.
Yeah. I mean, you're someone that, as far as I know, you know, you purchased your own place on your own.
Oh, 100%. But that's, but I'm built different. Okay. I have a couple places actually, Ryan. You forgot about the Collingwood spot.
Oh, I did forget. That's right. Look at you.
And then I'm invested in another place. You know, the other thing, if you're looking for a real estate agent, make sure to work with somebody who actually has their own place. I know that's tough for a lot of real estate agents to hear, but you have to actually go through the process of buying something and selling something yourself, I think, prior to giving people really accurate advice. And I know that's a weird thing to say because some people get into the industry prior to buying something for themselves. But I would suggest working with somebody who's purchased something for themselves so they know the process. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's so interesting. And that may be a hot take that may get some real estate agents going.
Hot take. You
know, on either side. And
do you, hear that? That's a sizzle.
That's a sizzle. You know, I think that there's, of course, when someone's starting their real estate career, maybe they haven't had a chance to buy first because, you know, maybe they have school debt or maybe they, this is their first like main career. So I get it may take a while to build that. But it is an interesting take because it's like, would I buy a car from someone that doesn't have a license? I know it's different, but I'm just saying like, I would want someone that has experience driving and understands a car. Different scenarios, of course, but like I can kind of see what you're saying. It's like, especially you who has multiple properties, you can really talk about the pains of owning as well as the huge rewards as well. You can talk to both because you own multiple properties or even buying your first property. You can talk about what it was like for you, right?
And again, I'm not trying to belittle anybody, but in my opinion, it's just you want to work with somebody that's purchased something for themselves already.
Okay.
And like knows the process. But again, like I some people have enough knowledge where you don't actually have to do that because, you know, you've done the transaction enough times where you know what you're doing.
Right.
But I'm just saying personally, that's what I would do. You're right. I would want to buy a car from a person who owns a car. For everybody out there, Ryan is extremely talented. He's one of my most talented friends. You really are. You're talented creatively. You're extremely, you're really like organized. There's a lot of stuff about you that's like, you know, that's that you need in a really successful person. So that's that you have all of those sorts of qualities going on. So I kind of want to get the backstory. I know the backstory, but I want people to hear it. Okay. So can you share your journey about how you did your undergrad, where you went, and how you became a content creator and how you got interested in this whole content creation thing, interviewing thing, podcasting? So if you want to jump into that, that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely been a journey, and I feel like there's sayings out there about how a journey isn't necessarily linear, and that's been my scenario, you know. I always, from a young age, I always was creating content even before that was a thing. Like I was the one who was going around with a video camera around the neighborhood, interviewing the neighbors or creating videos, like being a director and producer with my with the neighborhood kids. And I was creating like fun skits and stuff.
What kind of videos would you make?
We would just like do random like improv skits. Like maybe we'd have a character, we'd have a wig and that would be one character. And then we'd have a different outfit. It'd be a different character. And it's not like we wrote out a script. We would just kind of go with it. You know, I just like different scenarios, parodies, different.
I feel like I did that too.
Yeah.
I had this mini hoop in my apartment when we came to Canada. The first time we came to Canada, like, yeah, we had like this little tiny mini hoop on my closet.
Yeah.
And my mom got this really nice camera because my mom was always into like videography and photography and stuff like that. Yeah. And then I would set up the camera and my friends would come over and we literally like dunk on that hoop and record all of those videos. And then like go outside, we'd record a lot of skateboarding.
Yeah.
So we'd have like a lot of skateboarding tricks. And back when skateboarding was like extremely popular, we would all like hurt ourselves filming each other skateboarding. Yeah, trying to jump sets and stuff. Okay, so yeah, sorry, keep going.
No, but it's interesting that like that transfers to being an adult, right? Like the content that I still create is more entertaining and like, you know, could be parody, could be fun. And then yours has still always been kind of adventurous. You know, I just find that interesting how like what we do as kids often can lead to, you know, what we're doing as adults. And so I always was interested in that. I went to university thinking that I was going to, you know, go the business route and go that route. And then once I got into university, I started volunteering at the radio show at Western. And I had a radio show with a co-host live on air. And shout out Mute Party. It was called Mute Party. And on CHRW, now it's Radio Western. And it was just so fun. And then I learned about the media program at Western, but I was already there. Like I was already at Western. And so it seemed complicated to me to switch programs. So I just ended up going the sociology route and studied criminology as well, did a double major and, you know, learning about groups of people and, you know, society in general. I felt, okay, this can be applied to really anything, but I kept getting involved with media as as a side thing, like as a volunteer side of it, volunteering like with the Western TV show. So that was my fourth year, and I was a reporter for Western TV. I tried out always in the past for being a host. Sorry, this is a long-winded answer, by the way, but this is my journey, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, keep going.
Okay. I always tried out
as just host. Wrap it up quickly though. Okay. I'm kidding. Yeah, keep
this
going.
This is what I love about you. But yeah, I always tried out as a host and I never got it. But I was very like strong-headed as I want to be a host. And then one year, my final year at Western, or the summer before or whatever, I tried out to be a reporter. I tried out to be a host, but I said, oh yeah, I'd also be a reporter. Anyways, I got it. I was a reporter, the lifestyle reporter, and it was amazing. And I created all this content with another lifestyle reporter, and we'd come up with these cool ideas. And it was kind of almost like what they're doing on TikTok now, where it's the streeters and interviewing people and getting funny responses of students on campus. And they would go kind of like viral, at least what viral was back then, kind of, you know, like 20,000, 30,000, you know, views. And it was just cool. It's like, wow, like these ideas, and then me sitting there and editing for like 8 to 12 hours. That's how I first learned Final Cut. Would turn into something that people are really appreciating and consuming and loving. So then after university was done, I was kind of like, well, what do I do for a career? And I decided to go back into school in a post-grad program where I met you in the journalism post-grad at Humber College. Did a two-year program. I remember meeting you on the first day. I was like, oh, he's handsome.
Here we go. Here
I was like, he's handsome. And then I got to know you and I'm like, yeah, he's good looking, but this is definitely just friend vibes, you know? And you and I would clash heads sometimes and argue and stuff, but like
we'd argue in every class.
Like literally, like the class would stop, the teachers would be watching, and we would just be like not physically, but just with our words going back and forth. And I don't know, I'm sure people found it entertaining, but that's a little disruptive, but you know, we would do it. But it's because we're both passionate people. Both you and I are passionate people. So yeah, anyways,
passion, athleticism, prowess. Sorry, I was just saying words that I would describe both of us as.
Athletic. You would describe me as athletic.
Athletic, pure, raw athleticism. Okay, anyways.
I don't know about that. But yeah, maybe you're athletic. You have a prowess about you. I don't know. We're both just passionate. Maybe we prowess, we're creative, all that. So then, you know, you and I started up a YouTube channel with some other students, and we would do these interviews with Fix TV and interview people around campus. And that was really fun. I ended up getting some work in the industry. I got an internship at Entertainment Tonight Canada and worked for them as well a little bit. I got short-term contracts at eTalk. I was working in the entertainment news sector, and it was amazing, and working with such creative and talented and focused people. And I really enjoyed it. And all while I'm still working part-time, you know, at the Eden Center at the Apple store.
But the entire time you've kept all of this going. So
that's true. So that's
part of, you know, that's part of what I tell people all the time too. It's like, you can have a regular job, but you always have to have something that you're really passionate about on the side. Yeah. So you had the podcast with Katie Jones. Shout out Katie Jones. What was it called?
Is This Adulthood?
Yes. Is This Adulthood? Yeah. So you had that podcast going for years. You also had Here to Listen, and you have it right now. So the Here to Listen podcast, mm-hmm. You have your own podcast as well. So throughout this entire time, while you were working with all of these jobs, you continued with the content creation. That's true. What made you continue with that? Like you wanted to do that the whole time, regardless. Correct.
That's a great question. Yeah. Like even when I started at the Apple store, or when I was in Humber, I was still volunteering at Rogers TV and reporting in Mississauga, you know, taking a bus. I didn't have a car at the time, so I'd take transit or get a family member to drive me out to Mississauga to do these segments for Rogers TV Peel. And I think what it comes down to is, if you're passionate about something and you enjoy doing it, no matter what you're doing to make money, and I'm sure I know you're passionate about real estate, but I'm sure you can relate to this, that no matter what your day job is, right? Whatever's paying the bills for you to live in your place and get groceries and all that, why not continue doing your passion if you can? Like, and I think that when I launched the podcast with Katie Jones, you know, Is This Adulthood? We had no idea what it was going to be, or that people are going to listen from around the world and get like thousands of streams and downloads and all of that. And it was just one of those things where we knew that we love creating content and we love talking about these topics. So what I would say is just continue doing what you love. Don't think about how many views you're going to get. I mean, yeah, you can set goals, but also just like put it out there in the world. Don't hold things in. If you have that talent, like put it out in the world, whatever it is. Could be painting, could be creating music, could be, you know, creating content, interviewing people, right? Put it out there. It will, no matter how many views or, you know, it's obviously nice. It's a bit validating to get those views. But no matter what, it's going to give you something that you're passionate about outside of your day to day. And maybe you have it in your day to day as well. But yeah, that would be my advice, is just continue doing it. Just because you're working somewhere that doesn't relate to what your passion is necessarily, and sometimes, you know, it's both, you can still do what you're passionate about on the side, and it will give you a lot of fulfillment.
Well, that kind of goes into the question I was going to ask you next, which is, what kind of advice would you give to people that want to get into content creation or want to get into communications media? What would you say to those people?
I would say just do it. Like, there's so many ways to create content and publish it, right? Whether it's short form on basically every platform now, but TikTok, as well as like YouTube Shorts, or, you know, Instagram Reels, or more long form content, you know, on YouTube, or sharing it out there. And find a group of like-minded people that motivate you. And that's what I really like about you, Alex, is, you know, you and I are both, when we get together and we start coming up with ideas or start talking about, you know, content creation, when we're together, it's such like this, it's an energy, it's a vibe, right? We come together and it's inspiring and makes you want to get out there and create content. And so find like-minded people. If you can, consider maybe doing some kind of schooling, just because I feel like, number one, you probably will learn some skills that you can take into the real world. Number two is, it's great, I find, networking to kind of get you streamlined potentially into a job. And number three is, you can meet other people that are interested also in, you know, the content creation space or whatever it may be. And that's how I met Alex, was literally doing a postgrad and met some of my other friends, Katie Jones, who I did the podcast with. So that's, you know, some of my main advice. There's more technical things like that I could give about like starting a podcast and all of that, but find something that you love doing and just go with it and create content about it, because there's going to be an audience there for that. And if you love doing it, then it's going to be authentic. You're going to enjoy doing it, and it's just going to become natural, right? And that's something that I found with TikTok, is the kind of content that people seem to gravitate towards is the stuff that I just enjoy doing, right? Like, you know, talking to a camera and sharing my thoughts or doing a review. And, you know, there's all kinds of content that I can create. But when I feel most passionate about it, I find that the audience really connects with that.
Gotcha.
It ties into my question to you, actually, which is, what advice would you give to real estate agents? And specifically, you know, the ones that are just starting their career.
Well, first of all, I just have to put this out there. Real estate is very, very difficult. It's difficult to be good at real estate. The advice that I have people asking me all the time. I have people in my DMs telling me, you know, I'm thinking about getting into real estate. Can we sit down for a chat? Sometimes I'll hop on a call with people and just like talk to them about it.
Yeah.
But the number one thing is, like, you have to understand that it takes a ton of work. It's a ton of work. You have to prospect 24/7. If you don't have any clients, your main priority every single day is to try to book a listing presentation or a buyer presentation with somebody. So you need to try to get actual clients. It's really difficult to do if you don't sort of have a system behind you, or if you don't have any sort of plan. So the first thing I would do is, you know, try to figure out how you're going to get clients, whether or not your circle of influence is big enough for you to get clients from them. And then, like, just, you have to work 24/7. I know people don't want to hear that, but that's what you have to do. You have to door knock every day. You try to hit 100 doors every day. You try to get as many people into your database as possible. You have to try to run ads. You have to do a ton of educational content, whether that's on YouTube, on Instagram, on TikTok, and have a lot of people kind of come to you as their source for information in terms of what you want to, whatever, you know, what sort of purchase you want to make or things to do before you sell your house, stuff like that. But the main thing is like, you have to work really hard at it and you have to put the hours in, you have to make phone calls, because business isn't just going to come to you out of nowhere. You have to put the work in. Phone calls, door knocking, follow up, database, video. That's what you have to do. And, you know, that takes a long time. And a lot of people aren't willing to put that work in. And then they'll go get their license and they'll be in the industry for a few months in some cases, I've seen. And then they're out. As fast as they got into the industry, that's how quickly they're out. Because they're not understanding that it's extremely difficult and you're only getting paid on commission. So, you know, you have to do deals in order to get paid. It's not a salary job. So that's the advice I would say. Like, first, really look into it. Then figure out exactly whether or not you can do all of those things, whether you're comfortable being on camera, whether you're comfortable talking to 100 people a day, and then, you know, follow up with that and you'd be successful. Otherwise, don't get into the industry. That's it. That's my advice.
Yeah. I mean, great advice. And, you know, I love watching shows like Selling Sunset and Selling OC, you know, on Netflix, and those people have worked really hard, I'm sure, to get where they're at, right? But that's not maybe the storyline that's going to be on there, like maybe a bit, but it's mostly just the glam of getting dressed up and showing a beautiful home. And so I'm sure there's a lot of people that are inspired by that and are like, hey, I could do that. But you're so right. A lot of people don't talk about that, the grind. I've been out with you where you have to step away or hotspot your phone to a laptop that you're carrying in your bag or is in your car or wherever. And you have to literally get a deal signed, right? And it's
yeah,
just
and it's like
it
that happens. That happens all the time. That's another thing. It's like, forget about weekends. Forget about being completely offline on vacation. I know a lot of people like to say, oh, you know, you have to take your time on vacation. You have to be offline. Like, but if I have a client that wants to see something, wants to put in an offer or is thinking about selling something, I'm hopping on that call every single time. Wow. So it's like, that's another thing about it. You have to work 24/7. So whenever, you know, whenever somebody is available, that you have to kind of fit your schedule towards them as mm-hmm. well. See, I've been fortunate, like I've been doing this long enough now to kind of pick and choose who I work with for the most part. So there are a bunch of clients who I've turned down over the last couple of years, just because whether it's not, you know, it's a different area that I don't want to be in or different, whatever part of the city, or if I'm just too busy with, you know, with too many ongoing things, you know, that's the type of that, like I've gotten to that point. But if you're just starting out, you have to do all of those basic things in order to even scratch the surface of being a good real estate agent in Toronto. Because if you come up against somebody like me or somebody on my team on a listing presentation to get a listing to try to sell somebody's house, and you're coming up against one of us, like there's no chance you're getting that listing. No chance if you're new. So you have to try to get business in other ways. And yeah, that's the main thing. I think it's like very difficult to wrap your head around working 24/7 and actually having to talk to 100 people a day in order to make money. You know, we have the most real estate agents per capita in North America, in Toronto, more than New York, more than Chicago, more than any other place in North America. That's how many realtors are in Toronto thinking that this is easy. But the vast majority of them are doing absolutely no business at all. Mm. So it's like over 90% of real estate agents haven't done a single deal. I think it's like, I don't know, I can't even remember the numbers, but nobody's doing any business other than like the top 2-3% of realtors in the city. So it's very difficult, but if you work hard, you can make a lot of money. That's all. That's what I'll cap that off with.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I have one more question for you about real estate. And then I want to talk about other things that that I know you're passionate about, like food and traveling. But on the real estate front, what is the biggest mistake that you find that buyers make while trying to get their dream home?
The first thing I would say is like people go to try to look at places before they know exactly how much they can afford. So the first thing I would say is like, you have to go to a bank or mortgage broker to see exactly how much you can afford prior to starting to look at properties. That's the biggest mistake by far, because in some cases, say you can afford like $1.2 million, but you haven't actually been to the bank yet and you don't know that exact number. So you start seeing places that are like 1.5 million, 1.6 million, 2 million. And then in the back of people's heads, like, oh, we can definitely qualify for this. We can buy this. But then when it comes down to it and they go to their bank or mortgage broker and they say, you're qualified 1.1, 1.2 million maximum. And then now every place that they see within that price range looks horrendous to them because they've been looking at the 1.5, $1.6 million properties. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the biggest mistake people make. And then the other thing is like, most of the time, people will tell you, real estate agents will tell you that it's a good time to buy. It's a good time to buy, whatever. Like, no, not always is a good time to buy. In a lot of situations, it's not a good time to buy. It all depends on people's personal situations. If you can afford a place, if it's within your budget, if it's in the area you want to live, and you're okay paying the mortgage for 5 years, then it's a good purchase.
Mm.
But you don't want to be stretching yourself too thin. You never want to feel house broke. So another thing is like people, I think, stretch themselves a little too thin to get places that are right at or sometimes above their budget. And then afterwards, you know, stress about money monthly. Mm. So that's the one thing I would say, like, don't buy anything unless you know for sure that you can afford it. And you know that you have a lot of job security. Those are the two things.
One story that I always love telling about you, and I know you don't always love me sharing it, but it's such a cool story though. And I think you know where I'm going because I tell everyone that we meet, I'll tell them this story. And because I think it speaks kind of to manifestation and law of attraction and just putting your mind to something. In first year of postgrad, you literally said to me that your dream was to be a travel host and get to travel the world, trying new foods and getting out there and adventuring. And within, I think, a year, year and a half of that, you literally booked a gig as a travel host for a network TV show where you were traveling Canada. And then I know you went on to travel the world with it as well. So can you speak a little bit more to that? Because it's just so incredible to me.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. Appreciate that. Yeah. So the way that started off, you know the story, but I'll tell everybody. So first, the reason I went into postgrad is because me and my friends would always just grab cameras and literally like go around the city shooting fun and interesting stuff. So we filmed like Busker Fest. We filmed the Taste of Danforth. We were filming random community events and stuff like that. So I was like, I want to take this a little bit more seriously. So that's when I went to postgrad, met you. And then, you know, even you and I, you remember Mean Bao? Remember that Mean Bao segment?
Yeah, yeah.
So we were shooting at restaurants. We were like editing different stuff. And then I created a demo reel. So I edited a demo reel. And then this random company was looking for a show host. And I can't even remember if it was myself or somebody else who submitted my demo reel to them. And then they like called me right away. It was kind of random. But like it did take a lot of work from the filming to the coordinating to the producing to the editing. A lot of people don't know like how tough it is to edit these sorts of videos. You do, but a lot of people don't. And then basically, yeah, like I didn't even think it was real. So they ended up buying me a ticket to Montreal. The first place I shot was in Montreal. So we did 9 cities across Canada. So we went East Coast to the West Coast. And it was like really surreal because I'm standing there and there's this like $100,000 camera in front of me. There's probably 100 people behind the camera. Wow. And I'm in front of the Basilique Notre Dame, that big church, mm-hmm. and literally like talking about the church. And, you know, so it was wild. So did that. And then I did a whole bunch of other countries after that. But yeah, that was the journey, man. And I'm not a big believer of manifestation, but what I will say is that like, if you want to do something, actually write it down. So I have a million whiteboards in my house, put your big goal on top and then put all of the ways that you'll get there underneath it, and then break down every other goal underneath that to an even smaller goal. So you need to constantly be breaking down goals from the biggest to the smallest and see exactly how you can get there step by step. So that's what it is. And yeah, I've shot in a bunch of different countries, and the last place I shot was in India, was in Lakshadweep. So there was a bunch of small islands in the south of India that are like barely touched. So we were shooting all around there. Yeah.
Wow. That must have been a great adventure. And I'm sure the food was great.
Oh, the food was amazing.
Can you be a foodie if you're a picky eater? Because I feel like I'm a picky eater, but also maybe a foodie.
You can definitely be like, you can definitely be a foodie and be a picky eater. It just depends on where you're going to go for the cuisine.
Okay.
Like, I know you love Italian food. You love Italian food.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, there's a bunch of places in Italy, which I'm sure you would love significantly more than a place like, you know, the Netherlands or like England. Have you been to England?
Yes.
Worst food. I don't care what people say.
Really? Well, I had fish and chips.
Fish and chips is fine, but fish and chips is like so basic. You know what I mean? Like if you're in Italy, you can get whatever type of pasta you want. You know, it's like it's a different situation. But I think for you, like you would love Italy. You would love places that are Italian in different countries. And a lot of countries know how to do Italian food really well. Yeah. So yeah, I definitely think you could be a foodie and be a picky eater.
Do you have a favorite place that you've tried new food? And like, what was that dish?
Oh man, that's a good question. I don't even know. My favorite place in general, I think in the world that I've been to is Rotterdam, which is in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's pretty close to Amsterdam. Most people don't know Rotterdam, but Rotterdam has some really good food for me personally. But it's amazing because Rotterdam is this mix of New York and Europe. Because, okay, Rotterdam, sorry, I just slide off into this quickly. Rotterdam had the biggest shipping port in the world until like the mid-2000s, so like 2006, I believe. Biggest shipping port in the world. And one of their biggest trade partners was the States and New York. So New York had a massive shipping port. Rotterdam had a big shipping port. And there would be a lot of trade that continued between New York and Rotterdam. And so a lot of the culture from Brooklyn and like New York and Harlem came over to the Netherlands and to Rotterdam. That's why like in New York, Harlem is actually, it's a Dutch name. So it's H-A-A-R-L-E-M. So Harlem. So like there's this weird fusion of like New York and Europe in Rotterdam. Tons of like street performers, lots of just lots of cool stuff, lots of music, lots of hip hop, graffiti. I love Rotterdam, and their food there is really good too. So I would say Rotterdam's like my favorite place overall.
So I'm gonna boost your ego a little bit here. You know, you're a good looking guy, you're successful, you're really fun, and you're a passionate person. But you know, you're single, and I know that you don't need to date someone to be any of those things, but you know, it just makes me think, you know, as someone who is also single and kind of tired of the, you know, the regular kind of dating scene, especially in Toronto at times, there's a lot of great people, but I'm just wondering, you know, from someone like you that really has all their stuff together, how do you find is the best way to meet and connect with people?
First of all, I don't think I have all my stuff together. And I think that most people don't. But having said that, like, I don't know ways to connect with people. Like, I've been on the apps as well. I'm not currently on anything.
Okay.
I think right now it's just a weird time for dating in general. Like, don't you think?
A little, yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just trying to figure my own stuff out right now, you know?
Yeah. Fair enough.
Are you doing the same thing? Or are you like actively dating right now?
I'm open to it, of course, but I'm also at a point in my life where I don't want to settle. You know, I've been through phases where I go on a bunch of dates and within like 10 seconds of the date, I know if it's a match or not.
Do you leave when you do that, or do you stick for the whole date?
No.
But I stay 10 for the seconds, date. Bro, if you're talking about 10 seconds, you're like bang, like you don't vibe with this guy.
Okay, maybe a couple of minutes, but still it's like, that's what I've realized is a coffee date or a walk are good first dates, because then you can kind of end it a bit earlier. I did a lot of first dates in restaurants. And as you know, like you've worked in the industry like years ago, and it's like, you know, you have like the server greeting you, and then they give you time to read the menu, and then it's drinks, and then it's food. And then it's now you have to get the server to come over to pay the bill. And it's literally going to be at least an hour thing. And I've been stuck on those dates for a while.
Do you ever FaceTime people first?
I have been more into that if I'm unsure about the vibe or their pictures. And I feel like if they agree to it, some people don't agree, which is kind of a red flag. Mm-hmm. But if they do agree to it, I've had them come on and they look like totally different than there.
But you're weird with FaceTime. Like I tell you all the time, I'm like, I always try to FaceTime you and you just rarely pick up. And I'm like, bro, I talk to most of my friends through FaceTime now only.
Dude, that's a totally other topic that I'm sure we could talk about for a while, because like I have friends that won't even pick up the phone like for a phone call. I'm like that with FaceTime, because I'm like, now I'm focused on like what I'm looking like, where I'm at. I could be in bed shirtless, just like chilling, watching YouTube or whatever. And you want to see me. And I'm like, I don't want to go on video
right now.
So what?
It's a FaceTime, man. Like you're not talking to a boyfriend or whatever.
I've grown with you on that.
You've been better with it. Like me.
Yeah.
All of my other friends FaceTime way more than you. You're just like.
But I'll call you though. It's not like I only text. I will physically, like, I'll do the actual phone call.
Okay, but we live in an age where you can see the person's face and you could see their reactions and emotions. So, like, why wouldn't you FaceTime somebody?
But I can hear that in their voice, too.
No, you
can't.
Like,
I like to do things. Maybe I'm cooking and I don't cook a ton. Maybe I'm cleaning, whatever. Whereas I'm
FaceTime. Let him cook.
Huh?
Let him cook.
But, like, why do you have to see that?
What do you... Bro, okay. Anyways, we can talk about this later.
My final question for you is... How do you balance having a day-to-day job? And I know you're passionate about real estate as well, mm-hmm. but how do you balance that with also, you know, pursuing your passion?
So two things. Like, first of all, I love real estate. I love real estate. That, you know, some people think that it's like, you know, that it's difficult or like it's not fun. All of this stuff is fun. You know, touring these incredible homes, taking videos of these beautiful properties, like showing people stuff, putting polls up. Like, I love doing that stuff. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's number one. But number two is like, you have to just, yeah, like you said, you know, continue with your passion on the side. So like right now we're doing this podcast. So we're going to post it. This is, I've had such a good time talking to you. We've been talking for like 2 hours, you know?
I know.
Like, I have a podcast with Andy, Raptors NBA podcast. We do that twice a week. That's incredible as well. You know, like I have a lot of content that I'm planning and we're shooting in the next little bit. You have to do stuff that makes you happy. You have to do it. Otherwise, you're just going to be sad and miserable the whole time. If you're passionate about cooking or if you're passionate about, you know, starting some sort of company, you have to work on your passion on the side of your full-time job. If you don't do that, you're going to be sad. And then your life is going to pass by you and you're going to be even more sad. So that's the number one advice. There's this quote by this guy named Henry David Thoreau. And I keep seeing it lately, but the quote is, most men lead lives of quiet desperation and go to the grave with the song still in them. Mm-hmm. And that quote says so much about, you know, what our society is and how many people are passionate about stuff, but they just don't do anything about it. And that last few words there, that's their song still lives in them. It's like you have this passion, you have the song that's inside you, but you're not letting it out. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like for anybody who's interested in something on the side, don't give up your day job. Just do it on the side. And there might be a lot of late nights and it might be difficult if you have family, if you have kids, but you have to do it on the side. Otherwise, you'll be bored and exhausted and tired and sad. That's my advice.
Wow, that's great advice. And again, the quote, you know, gave me chills just you saying it there. And it's so true that sometimes you just got to put it out there rather than keeping it inside. And in today's world, as much as people sometimes bash technology or bash social media, you can really put out your passions and your work out there to the world to consume, right? Imagine back in the day before you could do that, it would just be kind of a local passion and all of that. Maybe you can gain international fame, but it's so much easier now and the world is more accessible really at your fingertips with technology. So just do it and release that song from inside, like you said, and
release it.
I think that that's a great way to end our conversation today. I've learned a lot from you and hopefully I've shared some interesting insights with you and everyone else as well. And thanks Alex for doing this with me.
Yeah, man. All right, you're the best. I'll see you later today, probably.
Hope so.
All right.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.